Welcome to Decades From Home, a podcast about Germany. I'm Nick Outen of 40%German.com and I'm joined by intrepid co-host Kat and our stalwart producer Simon Josie to discuss the weird and wonderful side of living in Germany. Hey Kat, hey Simon.
Hey Nick.
G'day Nick.
Hey both of you, I hope you've had an interesting week. Kat, I believe you've got something to kick us off with.
Yeah, I just want to say that I've been celebrating Christmas for about a week and a half now. It's just happened early this year. And, you know, you always see things sneaking in, but this year there's been zero resistance. I can fully say Christmas trees are up in a place that traditionally puts them up the night of Christmas Eve, right? And I've seen so many Christmas trees decorated everywhere. It's full. It's all on. We're in Christmas. And I honestly think it's because people don't really have anything better to do. Like, we just want to distract ourselves from what's out there in the world. And it's like, okay, yeah, what can we focus on that's good? Oh, Christmas. Yeah, that's the thing. Yep, I'm in.
Yeah, are these trees proper trees or are they fakey ones? They must be fakey,
people,
right?
With real trees around.
Really?
Yeah.
I want to know what they're doing to keep them alive for an entire month. Because when we go to Newcastle for Christmas, we get a tree like the 1st of December and it's pretty much on its last legs by the time we leave before Christmas Day. Whereas when we stay, which we're doing this year, I buy the tree a couple of weeks into December, so it lasts a bit longer.
Do you put water in it?
I do indeed. It's never fucking worked though, ever. I've tried putting a damp cloth underneath the tree and pouring water into the tree stand and every other possible eventuality.
I think I've talked about this before. We did a real tree in the first year we were here just for the novelty, but we've reverted back to Plastic Fantastic, which we had all the way through Levine in Asia since China and blah, blah, blah. And it's a lot less messy, I can tell you that. Mm. And yeah, don't run the risk of flooding, which we had a bit of a problem with in the first year. Mm. And arguably, it's a better use of resources because we've used it for near on 20 years. So there you go.
Yeah, I get the desire to have a plastic tree. And some of them are really nice. If you buy a decent one, at a distance, you couldn't tell the difference. And I don't mind, but I've always got a real tree, so it's just something I've stuck to. Me and my daughter generally go and buy it, so it's quite a nice experience. We did it in the snow last year. But yeah, I haven't noticed any trees up, but lights, definitely. Mm. Seen a lot of lights. Our lights have gone up. It was a Remembrance Sunday in Germany, and I put my lights up on Saturday, and we got an earful from my mother-in-law because Toten Sonntag. They're like, oh, you can't do that.
No.
You can't
really?
Do that. And I was like, yeah, but I've still done it. So just maybe the lights will cheer people up. But loads of people in the street have done the same thing. And we've cleared the decks inside getting ready to put up Christmas decorations. So
Well we could certainly all use a bit of cheer, couldn't we? Yeah.
we certainly bloody could. Speaking of cheer, why don't we start the show proper and see if we can cheer ourselves up with some nice stories. I've got a hot one off the presses for you. So there's literally hundreds of stories and movies about being Santa Claus and training to be Santa Claus and what life is like for Santa Claus out there in the world. But have you ever wondered what it takes to be Germany's Christkind? So pop quiz hot shots. What are the key attributes of the Christkind, do you think?
They give you presents, right? It's
yeah,
that one.
The Christkind brings the presents for sure, yeah.
So I was really confused about that when I first moved here because I thought, oh, okay, it's Nikolaus that brings a present. And then they're like, no, it's the Christkind. I'm like, who's the Christkind? And like, I don't know. Nobody could really describe me what it is. They're like, it's a concept. But it seems to be a teenage girl.
That's what I remember, if that doesn't sound too creepy. But that's probably the only thing I remember. That it's a, well, is it a teenage girl? I thought it was a sort of a tween or something, a younger girl.
It's, yeah. I mean, the Christkind's meant to be the Christ child, but for whatever reason, it's depicted in Germany as a sort of teenage girl.
Is that not so random? Yeah. I don't want to be disrespectful to religion, but yeah.
you can be as disrespectful as you want to the Christkind, because the Christkind's like a massive fabrication. It's Nick's traditional Christmas fact that the Christkind was invented by Martin Luther to get away from the veneration of Saint Nicholas.
Oh, wow.
And it's weirdly transmogrified into a very Catholic occupation. So the Catholic areas, they have the Christkind. In slightly more Protestant areas, they tend to have some kind of Nicklaus Santa Claus. And in the ungodly areas, they have, I don't know, the Christmas bear who lives in a tree. I have no idea.
Just for a bit of variation. But at first I thought it was like the Holy Spirit or something.
It's kind of got that vibe.
Yeah.
It was essentially to reorientate good Protestants towards the Lord and the Holy Spirit and all that stuff. But ultimately, it just ended up being a variation on a theme. So
Amazon delivery.
Exactly. Amazon delivery is the new Christkind. So yeah, so the Christkind brings the presents, but what are the key attributes of the Christkind, aside from being a tween that brings presents? Do you know?
I know when they come and I know what they do, but that's it. I'm really in the dark about the rest of it.
What about you, Simon? Do you know anything about the Christkind?
I might have once upon a time, because like when I first came to Germany, I was like absorbing as much as I could about Germany through all these various podcasts. And a lot of them were sort of, oh, you know, now it's fashion and now it's the Christkind and all these sort of cultural practices in Germany. But I kind of forgotten most of them now, to be honest.
Well, I mean, it's fair enough. You're quite old, aren't you, mate? So, well, we might not know the particulars, but there's one place you can go to learn about the Christkind, and that's at Coburg's Regional Marketing, which is, I guess, the tourist board in Coburg, have set up a seminar for aspiring Christkind where they teach not only sweetness and light, but also some of the sad realities of taking on the task of being many German children's embodiment of the Christmas spirit. According to Bayerischer Rundfunk 24, that reported on these classes, a Christkind must not be shy, must show a certain presence when it comes to Christmas markets, kindergartens, or old people's homes. That's not presence as in gifts, but presence as in their presence in the area.
Thanks and for clarifying that.
Yes, yeah, sorry, that's very important. And they must also radiate a lot of sympathy and friendliness. That's quite a lot of things. So, I mean, ultimately, that's producer Simon out of the running. So perhaps Kat and me, we'll be okay, though. We could
like
be the Christkind.
Like a bloody steam train, I could see that coming. Jeez.
Oh, it's telegraphed, wasn't it? Telegraphed to make fun of grumpy old, I was going to say Uncle Simon. But yeah, I mean, Uncle Producer Simon. So the trainee Christkind also learn professional communication skills, such as the importance of eye contact and how to use body language to their advantage. Sadly, though, they also take training to deal with online abuse because, as we've pointed out, for most of this year, we are in the worst timeline possible. Christkind are advised to tone down social media when performing the role to avoid, this is a quote, shitstorms, and to report any abuse to the police. I've got to ask, though, who in God's name is abusing the Christkind online? I know, it's Elon Musk, right? Elon Musk is attacking the Christkind. They're probably not Republican enough.
No, it might be their classmates. I don't know. You imagine, you know, the Christkind is probably also the Klassensprecher.
Potentially. I think there's like a lottery in some places. I think in some places there's a lottery, some places they have a competition. I think in this instance, a lot of the people who were in the running to be the Christkind or were taking part in these classes were like 20-year-olds. So they weren't potentially in school, but yeah. But you can just imagine there's some rotten scumbag out there who gets very angry about some unimportant aspect of the Christkind. Ah, the Christkind doesn't walk like that. I have to complain. I'm going to write a thread.
It's interesting because we've just talked about how vague the concept of a Christkind is. How can you say that somebody is not conforming to that? I just imagine it's such a wasted opportunity because you can imagine all the great TikTok Christkind accounts that have been discouraged.
Oh, we're missing all that Christkind TikTok content. What a shame. That's all I want to see now. That's all I want to experience.
When it's too cold to go to the Christmas market, you can just go on TikTok.
Yeah, exactly. Of course. This leads us quite nicely into the next thing that we wanted to talk about, which is related to all things social media. cut. There's some exciting changes happening to the I Am Germany account, which has featured predominantly on Twitter over the years. Do you want to tell us a bit about it?
Yeah, well, probably the biggest news is that Blue Sky has really taken off recently. We're nearly up to 1,000 followers. When I looked earlier today, we're like, 900 and something.
Fantastic.
And that was thanks a lot to the efforts of Kino Cow, who was on the account last week. So I feel like I'm his manager now. After he finished creating, I was like, oh, what am I going to get him to do next?
Yeah, you got to get a commission out of this. Should be making some money.
Yeah, so that's been cool. And then Mark's on there this week. He's doing both Twitter and Blue Sky. So he's trying to kind of pull people over there. So it'd be interesting to see how that pans out. And yeah, in the meantime, Twitter is doing what Twitter's been doing recently. And I've made a new page for the website for complaints and suggestions. And my reasoning for doing this was that I saw a lot and I would hear a lot, but I'd hear it a lot later because somebody had posted it directly on the account. And I didn't like that these things were just kind of being fired at the curators who give their time and energy to do this. So I wanted to direct that to a very specific place and not have it so open. People can say what they want, of course, but these people clearly are often talking to the person who's running the account and not the person who's actually curating. So that's what I'm trying to avoid.
It makes sense. Like, I follow the account. I'll be following it very soon on Blue Sky, but I follow the account on Twitter. And the only thing that ever aggravates me about the I Am Germany account is the people complaining about it. It drives me a little bit up the wall how many people are like, that's not the Germany I know, or I don't like this, it's boring, I'm going to mute the account this week, or it's usually so good, but I hate this week. And I'm like, you do know these people are actually seeing these comments. You're like, you're basically taking someone's like experience of Germany and saying, I hate it. I hate your experience. I hate your life experience. It's not mine, so I don't like it. And I find it kind of faintly ridiculous, but also just unnecessary in so many different ways.
I guess people who may be new to following it have some kind of expectation that it's representative of the whole of Germany at once, and that's not what it's about at all. It's really slices of life, so you can see kind of the diversity and the different kinds of people that live in this country.
Well, that was always how I understood it. I understood it as a like a snapshot over a week of someone's experience in Germany. Like, there's one that I always get is like, why can't we have more Germans on the account? All right, well, why don't more Germans volunteer? Like, you're constantly asking for people to volunteer to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's always these people who complain but would never do it themselves. And I find, yeah, if we've got a better place to put those complaints, because fair enough, criticism is criticism. Some of it might be constructive. But yeah, I'd prefer not to see it being directed at someone who's offered to give up their free time to do something for free for everybody's enjoyment.
Can I ask, have you committed to providing a full and timely response to every complaint that's raised?
Yes, I will be doing that. I should actually write that on the page. Yeah. If the email address is legitimate, they will get an answer.
Right. Impressive. Because I had assumed that you were just like putting it in one of those auto trash sort of folders.
I might do that in 15 years, but for now, I'm curious because maybe there'll come some legitimately good suggestions or something. And I like this idea of showing people who want to say something, going here is where you can say that. And somebody will listen to you who could actually do something about it.
So last week, we reported that Germany's defence minister, Boris Pistorius, was being lined up to replace Chancellor Olaf Scholz as the SPD's candidate in the coming federal elections, despite the fact Pistorius seemed very reluctant to grasp the poison chalice being offered. He even denied it, as we mentioned, in fact, in the story last week. But still, it rumbled on all the way up to this weekend. And the point last week where Pistorius had to come out again to say he didn't want the job, but he did it louder and via an official SPD video. the amount of times he's had to repeat he does not want to become Chancellor. He does not want to take over Olaf Scholz's pretty terrible position. Now, though, Scholz has been confirmed as the SPD's top dog after a vote from the party at the weekend. This should, frankly, put this really dumb story to bed. Do you think this is going to be the dumbest story of the coming election? Man who doesn't want job, says he doesn't want job, doesn't get job.
I guess people are that keen on replacing Scholz.
The media, it seems, are very keen on replacing Scholz. Like, it seems like the media are the only people that had any interest in this story, because I don't think it picked up traction around the rest of the country. And no one was talking about it. No one I knew who even gave it a second thought. But the journalists and the media seemed obsessed by this story. I am wondering what will topple it, what kind of dumbassery we're going to see. What was the phrase you used last week? Your cozy political winter.
Cozy little political German winter.
Yeah, your political German winter might be disturbed by some serious dumbass election stories.
I've been looking all week for little cool like advent treats, but it's only been depressing. Like Dieter Bohlen saying that he wants to be the Elon Musk to Merz's Trump.
Yeah, that's the craziest story. So Dieter Bohlen is, well, what is he? He's famous for being a judge on Germany's Got Talent.
And being a Schlager singer.
Being a Schlager singer and being a shill for Camp David fashion line for people who have not understood what fashion is for. And yeah, like, I don't like Elon Musk at all, but at least the guy had some ideas. He's fired a rocket into space. He's done something a bit more than sell some shitty shirts to 50-year-old men in Germany. I'm not entirely sure what Dieter Bohlen would actually do. Like, what would he do? I can't fathom what the fuck he would be doing.
I can't imagine how he could add quality to the situation.
Nah, not at all. It's such a weird story. And of course, it was reported with great fanfare in Bild Zeitung. And it just, like, I think they just, they're desperate for news. I think it's that thing that Kino Kao was talking about a few weeks ago, how there's so much news around an American election. We know everything about everything. In German elections, there just isn't a lot of news, but our media is orientated to act in the same way as the American media, but they just don't have enough news stories.
I feel like they're really grasping at any straw that they can get.
Weirdly, though, the thing that they seem to have fucking ignored is the fact that Angela Merkel's brought out a book that is essentially just like, wasn't my fault. I think that's the title. Wasn't me. I didn't do it. This like political memoir where she says, oh, no, definitely wasn't my fault with Russia. No, we were definitely not thinking short term when we had a second pipeline of gas being pumped from directly from Russia into Germany. Yeah, there's no one like having a critical analysis. I think I've seen more criticism of Angela Merkel on the BBC than I have on any German media outlet. They do love her, so she can do no wrong. But it's surprising, really, when you think about there being so little news, that might be something that gains traction. But no, we're still going to talk about whether Scholz should be Chancellor or not. With early polls showing the CDU in the lead in the lead up to the federal election, and possibly with a chance of governing alone going by some reports, we thought it might be worthwhile to look at the states that recently went through elections for the Landestag to find out what the possible coalitions could or should be when the federal election finally is settled. I think, what was it, the 23rd of February? And given that, although the CDU is leading in the polls, they probably won't reach over the 40% mark, it's maybe worth considering what kind of government we might end up with come February the 24th. So Sachsen, Thuringia, and Brandenburg have all been going through various discussions on possible coalitions, and it now seems that we might have some idea what these three states will actually be doing and how they'll be governed, in some cases months after the election. In Brandenburg, SPD and the Bundessarah Wagenknecht party have been in discussions for about 3 weeks, and with it looking like a decision could be reached by the end of this week. between the two parties, and negotiations seem to hinge on possible positions within the government that will be filled by either members from the parties, and the possible expansion of a military base that is on the border with, I think, Saxon. So this, it looks like we're going to get some kind of SPD-BSV coalition, a formal coalition potentially. In Thuringia, where the AfD did especially well, there's a minority coalition agreement that has actually been signed between the CDU, Bundesar Wagenknecht, and the SPD. So the three biggest parties that aren't the AfD have come to some kind of agreement. There's some details still to be kind of drafted and positions to be assigned, but most of it looks like it's been finally agreed. It does, though, lead us to our first question. Can you guess what the coalition of the CDU, BSV, and SPD has been nicknamed?
Oh.
Germany loves a nickname for a coalition.
I don't know.
Mm. Do you want a hint?
Yes.
It is food-based, and it's to do with the colours that are combined. If you combine the black of the CDU, the slightly purple of the BSV, and the red of the SPD.
Black, purple, and red food.
Mm-hmm.
Is it like a berry compote?
You're very close. You're so close. But which berry is it? Which berry is it?
Strawberry.
Nope.
Ah, what's red and purple?
Mm.
Blackcurrant.
Nah, it's close.
Raspberry?
No, it's not raspberry, I'm afraid. It's the Blackberry Coalition, the Brombeer Coalition is what they're calling it. That is the nickname that has been established for this slightly odd combination of CDU, BSV, and SPD. So that's maybe what we've got to look forward to, the Brombeer Coalition for the Bundestag. That's exciting, right?
I don't know if Sarah Wagenknecht getting anywhere near some power is a good thing. I'm not keen on the idea.
The AfD must be losing their shit, are they? I mean, that must be quite fun to watch.
I think mostly they're just spoiling for a fight, but there isn't much of a fight to have. They had in Thuringia, where they had the big kickoff about how the oldest member of the Landtag was an AfD member, so they got to be president for the day of the of the Landtag, and then they just proceeded to ignore everybody and use the bully pulpit to kind of make up spurious rumors about what was happening. That was their big thing. But ultimately, I think the truism is the AfD have been caught with their pants down a little bit, and I don't think they would really realize there would be an election so early, and are kind of focused entirely on how they can fuck that up for everybody and ignoring what's happening in the States. But let's be perfectly honest about the AfD. They really don't care about governing anything. They do care a lot more about pulling everything down and making everyone believe it's totally shit. So I don't expect a party with fuck all ideas for how to deal with the future will really have much to say in the forming of coalitions in the various states. I think it'll come down to when there's actual votes to be had.
So is the BSW, is it the new FDP basically, right? Or is it a different vibe?
Let's be honest, it's a cynical ploy to ensure Sarah Wagenknecht doesn't have to get a real job. I think that's what it is. I think she saw the writing on the wall with Die Linke. I think she realized that Die Linke weren't being forceful enough as a potentially pro-Russian party, and she wanted to have power, so is tapping into what the AfD and to a certain extent the CDU have been laying the ground for, which is the kind of obscenely ridiculous debates around migration and fears around migration and, oh God, the migrants are coming, everyone start panicking. It makes me concerned for voters that they can't just see how blatantly kind of careerist this plan is, or the fact that anyone would vote for a party whose leader's name is in the party's name. It still doesn't fathom that at all.
Right. Doesn't that say it all?
Yeah,
although we had been complaining about lack of personality, right? But this is kind of going the other direction.
Even though Sarah Wagenknecht has more personality probably than the average politician, it's still not a lot. And she doesn't really have any good ideas unless Russia's been feeding them to her. Speaking of which, Sarah Wagenknecht was heavily involved in the process of negotiating this agreement in Thuringia. And she spent a lot of the time discussing all the problems in Thuringia that need to be resolved by having a censor. Who are we kidding? Of course she wasn't doing that. She was talking about the war in Ukraine, because a state like Thuringia definitely needs to have that at front and center of all the issues that it has. So yeah, that's basically what she's been doing, is sounding off about, yeah, essentially why Russia should be treated like a sort of lost child, as opposed to, you know, supporting one of our nearest neighbours. Anyway, the agreement for this coalition deal in Thuringia will be voted on by various members of different parties. I think the BSV have some kind of internal party vote. The SPD are doing a questionnaire, and I'm not entirely sure what the CDU are doing. Maybe, I don't know, getting a show of hands. So there'll be some way of getting these parties to agree, but it looks like that is pretty much done and dusted, which leaves us only at Sachsen, which looks like it might have the most chaotic situation of all. The CDU and the SPD are nearing an agreement, but they are also in forming a minority coalition. It's not a great look having the two biggest parties working together, but what you're going to do, obviously, to avoid having to run another election or having a single party minority government, or even worse, doing a deal with the AfD. Essentially, the new government in Sachsen will have to present laws negotiated between the two governing parties, and then those will be passed on to all the different factions within the Sachsen legislature. And this could basically mean that a lot of changes to any draft laws, and also an opportunity for the AfD to cause some bother, as they all want to do. Essentially, I'm not sure what any of this tells us about what possible coalitions we might see after the federal elections, except to say that it does seem that the BSV is more palatable than the AfD, and is seen as more of a option for a coalition than the AfD ever would be. But I think we kind of knew that already.
Yeah, it should go without saying, really. Mm. Yet their popularity continues to rise.
I looked at the polls. I looked at the, again, this is what one of the things I like about German elections is they always do these Sonntagsfrage. So we always have a pretty up-to-date sense of what people's voting intention might be. I do think this is one of the things we need to check in with constantly, because I'm sure by the time we get to February, these polls will have shifted somewhat. So the CDU-CSU, according to YouGov, are sitting around 33%. There's some polls that have them as high as 37, but the vast majority have between 32 and 33 is about their going rate. SPD are at roughly 15%. The Greens are at 12. The FDP are as low as 3% on one poll, and mostly sort of fours and fives. Again, I'm not entirely sure how a party that loses votes and gets in by the skin of their teeth will see their leader become the finance minister. But again, stranger things have happened.
Good luck. Good luck, Lindner. I got the name right, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
Good
indeed.
Luck, Lindner.
Finally. It's not Harbeck.
They must have run out of feet to shoot, really, those guys.
Oh, I'm sure. Don't trust me. Wait until they get the posters out. I'm sure there'll be plenty going. It was moody black and white shots of Christian Lindner hunched over a table writing his resignation letter in advance. We've got Die Linke are about 4 to 3%, so they probably will miss out. We've got the AfD between 17 and 19%, which is about static. It's basically where they've been. That's 9% on the 10% they got in 2021. BSV, 7%, and all the others are about 6%. So, yeah, we have the potential will be that the Freie Wähler, who are this kind of loose coalition of independents, probably won't get in. Die Linke probably won't get in, and potentially the FDP won't get in either. So we maybe lose three parties from the Bundestag, which may or may not be a massive issue. I think some people are concerned about it. I think it's concerning when we talk about forming coalitions. But other than that, I'm not entirely worried about that eventuality. But we will definitely see what happens.
We will see indeed.
As law-abiding podcasters, it's difficult for us to get into the minds of the criminal underworld. Well, producer Simon loves a true crime podcast, but a few episodes of Someone Knows Something ain't turning him into Sherlock Holmes or anything. However, maybe Simon could put his skills to work solving a fiendish case that is developing in Leipzig. An Italian restaurant, Dolce Far Niente, has suffered two break-ins recently, In a surprise twist, none of the valuables in the restaurant were taken. There was an iPad, a laptop, all lying on the countertops, and they remained untouched. And instead, the scene of the crime focused on the fridge in the kitchen area, which was found to be, dun-dun-dun, empty. What was taken, I hear you ask? Well, a homemade tiramisu. So, have you ever been tempted, my fine co-hosts, to break into somewhere for a delicious dessert?
Nick, that's a really good question. And my answer is no.
What, really? You've never thought, that ice cream looks tasty. I'm going to kick those windows in and take it.
I'm seeing a twinkle in Simon's eye, though.
Funny you should say that, because I haven't, and up until this point in time, I have not thought. But I just wonder if this is the kind of thing that could turn me to a life of crime. I mean, you know, if you said, oh, look, there's a spaghetti ice down the road and it's quite easy to uplift if you were interested, Simon, I might well be interested.
My God, you've heard it here first.
You get up off the couch for that.
Yeah.
I might just get up off the couch for that.
What would turn our resident Sherlock Holmes into Moriarty? Free spaghetti ice, apparently. Bloody hell. It's a fine line, isn't it? Fine line between law-abiding citizen and criminal.
Yeah.
In a report for Redaktionsnetzwerk Deutschland, Darren Anlauf, the current owner of the restaurant, showed the reporters from R&D where the hungry burglars got in. There was a window that was drilled out, she said, and she pointed to the corner of the restaurant where there isn't any kind of coverage, particularly for cameras or any of the security devices. Apparently, there was a small hole in the wood frame very close to the window handle that suggests that the job was carried out by a professional pudding snatcher, no less. Oh, God. After the first break-in, Anlauf went on, we installed a surveillance camera at the counter and recorded the second break-in. My God. The black and white images show a masked person in light clothing and gloves, presumably a woman, walking purposefully towards the camera and finally turning it off. Uh-oh, the plot thickens. They knew where the cameras were. The burglar then took an aluminium plate and a cake server, carefully lifted the tiramisu out of the mold, wrapped it up, and then opened another window and disappeared through it. According to the surveillance camera data, the crime took place on October 29th at around 2:14 a.m. That is commitment to tiramisu. You got to ask, though, how good is that tiramisu? It must be amazing if you're willing to commit crimes for it.
Can I just say that I've also never lifted an entire tiramisu out of the mold? It would just fall through your fingers, right?
How big is the spatula? That's what I need to know.
Wow, that's really some dedication. What did she put it in, a plastic bag?
No, she put it into some other container and left through a different window. Look, I'm not any kind of investigative expert here, but the fact that they knew where to break in and they knew where the cameras were able to lift an entire tiramisu out of a form and then put it into another container. Are we dealing with an inside job?
Inside job.
Clearly, right?
It sounds like they knew where the spatulas were, not only the camera.
Yeah. And they knew how good the tiramisu was, that they confirmed what their ill-gotten gains would get them.
Although it is a restaurant. I mean, maybe word just got around.
I hope the police have been scanning through footage of recent patrons, because it's got to be someone who's visited the restaurant before, right?
You would assume so, right? You would assume so. But I'm just thinking of the things, if ever I've had free reign in a restaurant for like 10 minutes, what would I steal? Would it be the tiramisu?
It might be.
I don't know. I've got a very good friend who, she would probably go for the steak tartare. I'd probably go for, I don't know. Yeah, I'm probably going to be meat-based. I'd be stealing steaks for sure. I think that's the way forward. Tiramisu, yeah, I could take it or leave it.
You haven't tasted this one, though. So their business must have gone through the roof. Everyone wants to go and see what was worth breaking in twice for.
Yeah.
Of course. Conspiracy theory, it's not only is an inside job, it's actually being done with the knowledge of the restaurant owners, just for the publicity hit. Because we're all thinking, shit, that must be a really good dessert. Better go try it.
Oh, right. Are you saying that it's potentially the owner themselves who've broken in?
Well, I wouldn't want to get into trouble with the law or a no, lawyer or anything,
Of course not. This is satire. It's satire. Please don't contact your lawyers. We can't afford the legal fees. I've got to wonder, though, like, tiramisu's aren't that difficult to make. Like, even a good one. Like, why do you just make one at home?
It just doesn't make sense. The balance of the risk and the reward is just, it doesn't make sense to me at all. Why take all that risk for a pretty low payout? Let's face it.
Maybe the tiramisu doesn't taste particularly special, but the sort of frisson of theft makes it all the sweeter.
It's a story. You're involving the other senses.
It's the story. Let me tell you a story about where I got this tiramisu from. It'll make it taste all the better. I kicked in a window. Here I am.
So you imagine some thieves sitting somewhere huddling, eating the tiramisu.
It's, I love that idea. It's they speed off in a car and they pull up in an abandoned warehouse outside of the city and they haul the tiramisu out and they've all got nice clean china plates and they cut it up into individual slices and everyone gets their share. And then there's a Mexican standoff because someone tries to steal more than they should do. Yeah. I think we've got a Tarantino movie on our hands here.
Or they just divide it up into Tupperware and everybody takes their portion on.
That sounds very German. That might be exactly what happened.
I'm wondering if they finally apprehend this thief, that it'll turn out that the person loves the dessert, but then when they started stealing, they found that was the only thing that really sort of got them off, and they just tiramisu that's not stolen just doesn't taste the same anymore.
They have to break into etiquette to do their weekly shop, otherwise, otherwise it just isn't the same. You know, you got to get your rocks off somehow. Well, going back to what Simon said about this potentially being some kind of guerrilla marketing strategy, there is now a notice hanging in the entrance area of the restaurant, and it says, next to a picture from a surveillance camera showing the suspected perpetrator, wanted, tiramisu thief. And, of course, our tiramisu is so good that it keeps getting stolen.
They did it all just for that line.
Yeah, I guess these nighttime Naktish wranglers can be thanked for boosting the social media visibility of this particular restaurant.
That's a fabulous play on words, Nick. I just hope that my dessert is safe.
I'll be locking mine up from now on. I'm going to get double locks for the fridge.
Your insurance policy is going to go through the roof.
Oh, that's okay. I only pay 20 euros for my tiramisu insurance policy.
I've got one that covers all cold desserts.
I was going to say, is that insurance to get tiramisu or insurance to protect my tiramisu?
I just had an idea. I think what we should do as a podcast is we should go there and record a live episode from the restaurant. Ooh. And
enjoy the tiramisu.
Well, I've naturally, but just think that could do amazing things for our numbers. Real boost.
True.
Live from some random Italian restaurant in Leipzig.
We could go to the 40 euro pizza place as well.
Oh yeah, we could do like a tour,
we'd
right?
Do a tour of all these like dodgy food places and articles.
We could go get some cocaine pizza. This tiramisu that's worth breaking the law for. Listeners, let us know about more bizarre food stuffs that we need to try.
Yes, anything happening locally in your area that we should know about?
I saw an advert for a Moltashan burger the other day, and I'm quite interested in that too. So we can add that to the list.
I'd travel for that.
Very stodgy. That was my suspicion.
I think this is a brilliant podcast marketing idea of mine. And
surprise! You think your idea is great? Who knew, Simon? Who would have thought?
I'm going to work on this over Christmas break, I am.
Oh, watch out, Kat. I think he's going to be starting to work out how he can break in for a third time, because clearly it was Simon that was doing this all along.
Oh, we're going to need a minivan.
Yeah, someone get the Pulitzer eye. Someone get tattooed on this. That brings us to the end of the show. We're off to kick in the Etika windows to get ourselves a Muller Fruit Corner. Ah, yeah. If you're enjoying the podcast, why not give us a rating on Apple Podcasts, which only takes a minute and can really help us. You can also rate us on Spotify, so chuck some stars our way there as well. Retweet us, share a link, or post with the hashtag Decades From Home, all lowercase on Twitter. As ever, if you have any questions, feedback, or maybe an article or topic you'd like us to cover, you can tweet Dillion at Dillion Algema, Kat at Diebestimmerin, and you can tweet me at 40% German. You can also get us on the Decades From Home Instagram account, which is humbly curated by the wonderful Kat. So go over there and say hi, drop us a comment, give us some likes, all that other exciting jazz that you do on social media. You can also get us on decadesfromhome@gmail.com. If you have time, take a look at 40%german.com. Weekly articles are up every Saturday. All that's left to say is thanks, and bis zum nächsten Mal. Tschüss!
Tschüss!
Do we have a cat bit at the end?
Well, I was going to wonder, are you going to fuck something up this week, Kat?
You guys expect me to come up with something witty and spontaneous every week now?
No, it's not just just spontaneous.
Expectation is there. I feel under pressure. Well, next week I'll think of some kind of little Habeck fun fact to drop in at the end of it.
At least you got his name right this time.
I did. I've been practicing.